Welcome and thank you for joining us on the Stay Healthy South Sound podcast, where we want to give you tips on staying healthy and even expose common myths about health and aging so you can enjoy a healthier and active life in the amazing South Sound. Brought to you by Dr. Jennifer Penrose, owner of Penrose & Associates Physical Therapy.
All right, Jen, thank you so much for coming on the Strong Mamas podcast. I am so excited that you're here. I just know that we're going to have a fantastic conversation today.
I'm excited to be here. Thanks for having me.
Now, for those that might not know, Jen, you and I go way back. In fact, I can give you credit for a couple pivotal moments in my career. I don't know if you remember this, but you were the first one that hired me out of college. Do you remember that?
Yes, I do. Yes.
Yeah, I worked alongside you and some other PTs as an aide right out of college. That job, I can attribute so much of my knowledge now from those years that I spent working alongside you guys.
That's awesome.
Yeah. And then several years later, all the way back in 2009, you gave me the opportunity to launch my own personal training business in your PT office, which was awesome.
No, that was fantastic. It was a good move for everybody. It really was.
Yeah, it was cool to have kind of that symbiotic relationship. We had a massage therapist in there too. So to kind of have all the pieces in place of all these professionals that could just take care of your body in every way, it was great.
Yes,
it was. And I know that so much of what I know about common injuries and some of the most basic injury prevention and rehab methods, I really did learn from you. You are incredible at what you do, and we feel honored to get you here on the podcast. I know that our listeners are going to learn so much today.
Thanks. Well, I have to echo, I appreciate all your workouts. I'm a big fan, and people just need to stay in them, stay at it.
Yes. I totally agree. Yeah. And I'm excited because I know all the listeners are really, they're anxious to get to the bottom of some of their aches and pains, specifically those most common injuries that we have in our feet and our knees and just our legs in general. And we're honored because you literally wrote the book on this subject.
Yes, I will refer to that a couple times.
I'm excited to hear more about that. Now, it was just last March, kind of in the middle or the beginning of the pandemic, kind of crazy, that you released Run Forever, The Secrets to Common Running and Walking Injuries. Well done. That's a big, big deal.
Yeah, that was an ongoing saga for a while. I kept starting it, putting it down, starting it, putting it down, but finally finished.
Oh, yeah. Well, I'm excited that you got that out there because that information, we need it. We really do. And I know that a lot of common running and walking injuries have to do with the feet and the knees, which is exactly what we're talking about today. And I would just kind of love to know what led you to write your book? How did this become a passion project of yours?
So actually, I was asked by Rachel Jameson, who runs the Gorilla Running Club, years back. She's like, you really need to put a book together. And so I was like, well, okay, maybe. And I started writing, believe it or not, this should get a good chuckle from the moms out there. the moms that have to be busy all the time. When I was on bed rest, I started writing my book because I couldn't work and I couldn't do anything else. So I thought, well, I have all these ideas and I have my brain and I have a laptop over here. So I just started writing it. And basically that was the first bed rest with my second kid. And then I put it aside. Then I had bed rest again with my third kid. So wrote it some more and then I put it away. And then I just finally was in a business coaching group and everyone was publishing their book and using it as a great way of getting education out to the community and a marketing tool. And I'm like, okay, I pretty much have this thing done. Let's just do the final push. So that's what did it.
It was kind of your fourth baby that you birthed. Fortunately, that one did not need bed rest.
Right. Well, and it was actually really fortunate that I didn't finish it earlier because in the beginning, it was a very academic writing that I had. And then the business group was like, tell patient stories throughout the book so that people can identify and relate and find themselves in the story. And so I had to go back and weave those in, and it did make it more readable versus just very academic.
That's what makes this so wonderful, is the relatable piece of how I've worked with so many people. You know, these are the patients that I've seen that have dealt with these injuries, and now look at them based on what I've taught them and what they're able to do. And it encourages people like, wow, there could be hope for me too.
Exactly. So the stories really made the book. So I'm glad I set it aside. But God knew what he was doing.
Oh, for sure. For sure. Now, I'm just super excited to dive into this conversation with you today, because I know that there are a number of moms listening to this show that have just been living with annoying aches and pains. You know, nothing really serious, nothing that really warrants them to go to a doctor and really find a resolution. It's not like they've ruptured their Achilles or blown out their ACL, but they do have legitimate pain. And I think we need them to know that there is a solution to that legitimate pain, even if it seems small, even if it seems a little insignificant. I think as moms, we tend to think our bodies come last. Like if it was our kiddo that had plantar fasciitis or a knee issue, we'd get them into the doctor right away or off to physical therapy right away. But when it's us and our bodies, we think we can just live with it, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it'll go away, or, you know, we minimize it.
I'm just kind of curious. I mean, with the moms that you treat in your practice, with the things that they come to you with, how often are their issues kind of chronic? Like they've been dealing with it for a long time. Do you see that pretty often?
Yeah, that's it. You know, actually most of my patients, to be quite frank, they tell a story of they've tried this, they've tried injections, they got a CT scan or an MRI or this, that, and the other. And sometimes, many times, I'd say 7 to 8 out of 10, they kind of are like, well, I guess I'll try physical therapy. And I'm thinking, you guess you'll try physical therapy? Like,
oh, like it's
a last
the last resort.
Yes. Yeah. So it's interesting. I still feel like not everybody realizes they could get help sooner. So I often do, the chronic story is a common story.
That's really interesting. Now that you bring that up, it does make me realize that a lot of people do use physical therapy as a last resort, almost like, well, that's the option that's going to take work from me.
Yes, exactly.
And maybe multiple visits. You know, we just want to go to the doctor and get a shot or a pill or something to make the pain go away right away. But it's like, well, if you could do 8 to 12 visits with a PT and make it go away forever,
right?
Wouldn't that be better?
Like, let's actually fix the problem instead of just the symptom. Because, I mean, there are times when I do think patients will need an injection, or they might need a medication for a short bit to get the inflammation down so they can tolerate the movements again. So sometimes that's needed, but if that's all you do, you didn't actually cure the symptoms of where that pain came from. You just put the fire out. You just put the inflammation out.
Totally. You just kind of put a Band-Aid on top of the actual problem. But if we can get under the surface and figure out, okay, where's this dysfunction coming from, and correct that piece of it, then you don't have to live with it anymore. And that's really the goal, right? Is to just function so much better. So I really want to dig in to the specifics of some of the most common lower body injuries, the aches and pains that we get in our feet and our knees. And how about we start just from the ground up with our feet? Okay. So with the feet, I mean, I think the most common thing that comes to my mind is plantar fasciitis. I think that's a pretty typical issue that some moms might deal with. Would you agree?
Yes. It's the number one foot issue that people seek help with. So it's definitely up there. And it's the fourth most common walking and running injury. Wow. So it's pretty high on the list. Yes.
Yeah. Can you explain exactly what plantar fasciitis is?
So plantar fasciitis is anything with itis means inflammation of that structure. And so your plantar fascia runs from your bottom of your foot, from your heel, your calcaneus bone, to your toes. And it's like a thick, dense tissue, almost functions like a ligament more than anything else. So it's very, very, very dense. And when it's inflamed, they just give it the name plantar fasciitis.
I'm wondering if someone could experience plantar fasciitis in different ways. Like, are the symptoms a little different? Like maybe someone could feel it up by the ball of their foot. Maybe someone else is feeling it in their heel. Like, does that happen from time to time, or is it a pretty typical symptom, like one spot?
Usually the most common complaint is they feel pain on that inner corner of their like heel arch area. That's the most common place you're going to feel it. Sometimes it can be kind of spread to like a dull ache through the arch. It's usually worse in the morning when you first take a step, and it's or if after you're sitting for a while and you get up, like that pressure on that corner of that plantar fascia, it usually is pretty sharp. So the morning first few steps after sitting for a while, getting up, climbing stairs, and after intense activity, that's usually when people will say that it aches or burns or feels sharp. Some people just describe it as a dull ache through the whole bottom of their foot. So there's a little variety there.
So it could kind of feel a little different. I know years ago, I suffered from plantar fasciitis, and for me, it felt like someone was taking a knife and stabbing it into the arch of my foot.
That's a common one. Yes. Yeah. It's usually very uncomfortable.
The knife stabbing. Yeah. So what would you say might be some of the most common causes for plantar fasciitis? Why do people get this?
So the specific cause of plantar fasciitis is actually poorly understood, to be quite frank. There are some things that I can kind of, at least from the literature and what I've seen in the clinic. So external causes like training errors or running in improper shoes or shoes that are wearing out, running on hard surfaces. And then there's internal factors, like you have very stiff ankles. So like when you go to squat, you can't keep your heels on the ground because your ankles are just that tight. So decreased ankle dorsiflexion is a risk factor for plantar fasciitis. If you just have some foot and lower leg structural issues as well. So if you have a foot type that in order to absorb force, when you land, you have to pronate really rapidly and sometimes too much. That kind of whips that plantar fascia, and it starts to strain that area. So structure has a lot to do with it. And then some people who have a real high arched, stiff foot, that plantar fascia is kind of always on a stretch or a strain, especially if they don't have the right amount of arch support in the shoe just to help support that arched foot. Then lack of the big toe doesn't extend very well. It's called lack of extension in the big toe.
So like the ability to like bend upward.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And so, you know, people who try, like when you try to do planks and you have a hard time being on your big toe, like that, if that's because of mobility, if it's stiff, that could cause your plantar fascia to get tighter and then create inflammation and irritation. And then actually this one surprised me when I was kind of learning about plantar fascia in the past, but when you have weak calf muscles, that also is linked to plantar fasciitis. So as you can tell, there's lots of things that I have to investigate with each person to figure out the right treatment plan, right? Because if they have weak calf muscles and I don't give them anything to deal with that, well, I'm probably not going to completely fix them.
Yeah. And so, I mean, you might have a mom that's like, well, I have flat feet, or another mom that's like, but I have high arches, and they're both dealing with the same thing. And it could be confusing. Like, well, that doesn't make any sense. But what you're saying is that it could be a bunch of different issues that could be causing it.
Right. Pretty much at either end of the spectrum, if with the foot, if you're too mobile, like a very pronated flat foot, or if you're very stiff and on the other end of the spectrum, either case can get plantar fasciitis. If you're average, it probably isn't going to get you as much. So it's kind of one of those things where in the medical world, average is always
average is good. You're good if you're average. Right. I like it.
Yeah.
Yeah. So when someone is experiencing a flare-up, like they're getting the stabbing in the bottom of their foot, what is something that they might be able to do to kind of relieve that in the moment, to give them some immediate relief?
The first thing I would do is definitely ice. So you can freeze water in a water bottle and roll your foot over it to do like an ice massage, or just set your foot on ice. But icing is really going to calm down that irritation the best. So that's probably number one on the list. And then second is really make sure you have good shoes on all the time. Like don't walk around barefoot, because it's, you got to think of that plantar fascia like a ligament, and it's strained and irritated. And so you'd want to support it all the time. And pretty much when we, as humans, we're on our feet almost all the time, you know, so that their workouts might need to change for a little while of having shoes on, just so they can support that plantar fascia.
So it's probably best for someone to avoid for a period of time doing anything barefoot or wearing shoes that aren't supportive. What about other things that they should probably avoid? I'm assuming just anything that causes pain, right?
Yeah. So that, you know, if they can, before they get up, like if the worst thing is that those first couple steps, sometimes just massaging the bottom of your foot with your fingers or with a massage ball, just to get some blood flow into that area, it tends to not be quite so irritated then when you stand on it and walk those first few steps. So, you know, you may not always have time to do that, obviously, but
it could get you going if you needed to.
Right, right. And I would just avoid a lot of walking and impact stuff for a bit. There's also low dye taping. That's fairly easy to teach people how to do. And thanks to YouTube, I'm sure everybody can YouTube how to do it.
Yeah, no, I can testify to that. It was like a year ago, Scott, my husband, he actually ruptured his plantar fascia. It was the week right before we actually had a trip planned to Las Vegas. And we were planning on just walking everywhere. And so we taped his feet up every day. And it literally provided him with an external plantar fascia that allowed him to keep walking.
Yeah, that's exactly what it does. It basically just is like building a plantar fascia on your foot. I mean, that's, if someone's really miserable, I do that for sure on the first visit and teach them how to do it so that they can do it, you know, till they, you know, see me again, because more than likely it's not going to last for more than a day or two. But yeah, no, that's probably one of the best things they could do.
And then maybe for like the longer term, like, okay, so say someone is really dealing with this and it's just not going away, icing it, it's fine, it helps in the moment. But what would you suggest, like specific exercises or stretches that you would recommend that she do to work on improving her symptoms, or maybe even to perhaps ultimately get rid of it?
So I think a couple things to do when you have plantar fascia is ongoing, you really need to make sure that is the true diagnosis. So I have had a few people where they've been to PT elsewhere and they have the classic pain in the arch and on the inside corner of the heel. And lo and behold, I do a stretch where I actually stretch a nerve, the tibial nerve. So there's a specific test for that. And that was what reproduced their pain. So this person had a nerve entrapment that was causing pain that looked like plantar fasciitis, but it wasn't. And so, you know, they'd been to months of therapy and lo and behold, that wasn't being treated the right way because that wasn't really the diagnosis. So then once I discovered it was the tibial nerve issue, giving them the right stretches and kind of doing the right foot mobilizations and manipulations to their foot to free up that entrapment of the nerve, then their symptoms went away in about, I think it was about 10 visits that we were done. So it is important, if something is lingering, it can look like it's plantar fasciitis, but it may not be. So you may, you know, at some point you need to go in if it just is not resolving with typical ice stretching. So calf stretching and plantar fascia stretching, I would add that into the mix. And plantar fascia stretching is basically, you know, you're pulling your foot up towards you, and then you're also grabbing the big toe and pulling it back towards you and trying to get that extra stretch through the plantar fascia. And then calf stretching, because it helps that ankle dorsiflexion, because if you're stiff with that, that does tend to correlate with plantar fasciitis. So those two stretches, massaging the bottom of the plantar fascia, wearing good shoes. And if you don't know your foot type, like most people, if you're having a foot problem, well, at least start with, do you know if you have a stiff foot? Or do you have a floppy foot? And do you know which shoes you should be wearing or shouldn't be wearing? Because a lot of times people buy shoes for fashion and they like them. They think they feel kind of good in the store. And then they come and see me and I'm like, So I can bend the shoe in half. And for you, that's a bad thing. Maybe for someone else, it's fine. But for your foot type and what's going on, this is not going to help you. This is not your friend. You know, so sometimes just not knowing, you just don't know what your foot type is and what you should be wearing. So those are probably kind of my big things about plantar fasciitis, but definitely like if it's not resolving, you need to dig deeper and it could actually be something else.
What do you think about, I've seen those contraptions that people might wear while they're sleeping, you know, like, yes. It like wraps around their foot and like pulls their foot into flexion. Yes. What do you think about those?
So most people hate the night splint, the rigid splint. Yeah. They just can't tolerate that all night. So if they're really tight, they might find they could wear it during the day if they're on a computer or doing email or, you know, reading or watching TV or something sitting, because you're not supposed to walk in that night splint. Anyway, that's an option. The better option, it seems like, is the Strasburg sock, where that toe, there's a piece that attaches to the toe because then it pulls on the plantar fascia. So it's kind of like much milder in terms of toleration for a stretch versus that night plastic splint deal. This sock, it's called a Strasburg sock, and then it pulls your big toe back as well. So then your plantar fascia can be on stretch during the night. And it's less vigorous, but it still gives you a mild pull. So that's probably a better option.
Yeah, that sounds more delightful than the contraption.
My youngest kiddo had Sievers disease, where the basically he's getting heel pain from growing. And so his calf and Achilles was too tight. So I got one of those splints for my kid to wear, and he could only tolerate wearing it when he was watching TV. And that was about it. Like, that's all we got. Cause like he wasn't going to sleep in it. So yeah, the splints are, they are a great way to stretch, but you'll probably get 1 hour out of it. And then you're like, all right, get this thing off.
Yeah. That sounds about right.
As a listener to the Stay Healthy South Sound podcast, we're offering you a free 15 to 20 minute pain screening, either by phone, virtual call, or in person, to see if physical therapy is the right starting point for you. To sign up, contact us at info@penrosept.com or call us directly at 360-456-1444. That's 360-456-1444. And now, back to this episode.
Okay, well, that's awesome. I feel like we know so much more about plantar fasciitis. Now, let's kind of move up the leg next. Let's move to the knee joint. I always like to think in joints. So let's head up to the knee joint. I feel like with the knees, there's usually two different types of common knee pains. Usually people will describe to me like the kneecap pain, or perhaps like patellofemoral syndrome. And then there's also usually like the IT band pain kind of on the outside edge of the knee. So let's talk about that kneecap pain first. So what exactly is that when someone feels the pain right along the front of their knee joint?
Yeah, I would say the patellofemoral syndrome is pretty much the front of the knee. Anything around the front of the knee, it tends to kind of go towards the inside part as well, but a lot of times it's just the front of the kneecap. And that kneecap can just wear unevenly over time, and that wear and tear and that cartilage softens behind the kneecap, and that can lead to arthritis as time goes on. But you can also have, with teenage girls, I see patellofemoral a lot in teenage girls because of the same kind of the growing issue and that uneven of the forces and the muscles not catching up with the bony growth. They'll get patellofemoral syndrome, but it doesn't mean they're having arthritis. It's more just the growing and the muscles not catching up as fast. So that's typically the two camps of people I'll see it in, is like the teens. And then also, you know, as people kind of age and their cartilage is softening behind their kneecap.
That makes sense. So they might be feeling it maybe directly above the kneecap, maybe behind the kneecap, maybe right below the kneecap, maybe to the inside of the kneecap, kind of around that whole area.
Yeah. Unless it's a sharp joint line pain, you know, where you might, and more kind of meniscus type symptoms. Typically it's a vague, achy front knee pain, usually inner, worse after prolonged sitting or in getting up from sitting, stairs, squats, jumps, running, those kinds of activities will bother it.
Okay. So like just general, like knee bending, anything where you're having to bend the knee a lot.
Pretty much. Yeah. Cause there's all that shear force on that kneecap with the bending is what gets them. They really can't tolerate it very well. Yeah.
So then what are some of the causes of patellofemoral syndrome? Like what are things that when you see people come in and they're experiencing these types of pains, what are the things that have caused this pain? Is it just maybe the tracking of the kneecap, maybe their technique, maybe their knee structure? I mean, maybe all of the above.
Any and all of those. Yes. Abnormal patellar tracking is high up on the list. And that's usually from, you know, like the teenage girls, it can be kind of that growth stuff happening where the muscles aren't catching up with the bony growth. And then they often have weaker hips. So many times it's muscular imbalances for women tend to have weaker hip muscles. And then that IT band tends to be tighter. The hip flexors tend to be tighter. So it pulls that kneecap more to the outside. And then their inner quad tends to be weak. So that kneecap is just being pulled more to the outside, and they need to work on strengthening the inner quad. And then they're just, their glutes usually are pretty weak and not controlling their leg. Like their knee dives in when they do a squat or they go up the stairs or down the stairs, their knee dives in. So it puts more stress on that patella area. So all the stuff you were mentioning, yeah, any of those combinations would be at fault. Hip and knee angles that you were born with. So that structure comment you made. So that's when things get a little trickier, right? Because you can't control the structure you were given, but you need to understand your structure so that you know how to accommodate for it with shoes or with exercise technique, or you need to know that, like, all right, I have a propensity for this because this is the way my hips are formed. This is the way the angle of my legs are and my feet are. So I'm going to have to spend a little more time doing these particular exercises, or I need to make sure I wear these kinds of shoes. Really, in general, I try to educate all my patients on their body and their structure so that they are armed with that knowledge for the rest of time so they can make better decisions and kind of really promote like what will help their body long term.
Yeah, that really reminds me. There's a client I've been working with where her tibia, so her shin bone, is actually rotated outwardly. So it's slightly externally rotated. But so when she's standing and her kneecaps are pointing straight forward, her feet are actually kind of duck footed. So it's tricky because usually her instruction or the cues that someone might give her for a regular squat is to do the squat with parallel feet, right? But what you're saying and what I've tried to teach her too is like, actually, if you do your squat with parallel feet, your kneecaps are actually going to be tracking inward. So that kind of comes back to what you're saying. Like, let's make sure that you're lining up for how your body is designed. So in her case, if she always did her squats with her feet parallel, she might be creating bigger knee issues.
And sometimes they get it when you start looking at that and say, well, show me, do it parallel and tell me what you feel. And they're like, ah, yeah, this is what I feel. And then have them watch it in the mirror and they're like, ah, I get it.
Yep. Yeah. I totally feel like for knees, especially having that mirror feedback, or if someone doesn't have a mirror, like set up a camera and just video yourself going through a lunge or a split squat or a squat so that you can get that visual feedback and say like, oh man, it doesn't feel like my knees are tracking offline, but wow, when I look at it, I'm really, you know, my knee is really diving in or it's pointing outward. And to have that feedback is so important.
Yeah. It's definitely eye-opening when you point it out to them or they finally get to see it on video or in the mirror, et cetera. One of the other things that is common in this group that I see with walking or running mechanics is they land with their knee more bent. And when you land, when you strike, when you heel strike with your knee more bent, that's going to put more forces through the patellofemoral joint. You won't know that you do that. I mean, every person I've ever put on the treadmill to videotape them for walking or for running, they have no clue that they're doing that. And you can't really catch it unless you play it back in slow motion so that you can, you know, play it where it's 240 frame per second. So you have to be able to slow it down to catch it. But once you do, then you can kind of help correct it by increasing cadence, and it cleans it up pretty quickly. So it's one of those, like, if you keep struggling with something that you love, like hiking or walking or running, it's worth getting the gait analysis done to figure out, like, huh, do I do that? Because most people, they don't know.
Oh, yeah, for sure. I mean, you probably are just focusing on keeping up with your mileage.
Right.
Not dying.
Right. Exactly.
You're not really thinking about how your foot is landing and where your knee joint is in space.
Nope.
Yeah. So when someone has experienced this kind of knee pain, like we're talking about, kind of right through the kneecap, would you say it's kind of similar to what they should do in the moment for immediate relief, similar to what we talked about with plantar fasciitis, like the icing, avoiding the activity that's causing the issue? Is there anything else?
There is some really good ways to tape the knee to unload the kneecap. So like a patellar unloading technique with KT tape. So that is really helpful, especially if it's not horrible pain. And it's not, you know, if your knee is really, really swollen, there's no amount of tape that's gonna help with that. But if it's kind of more of a general ache and not too bad, the KT tape can make a pretty big difference for the kneecap. So that's probably one of my go-to methods: icing, taping. And then, you know, amazingly enough, that people usually are pretty tight in their quads and hip flexors. And so if they do some foam rolling of the quads and the hip flexors or massage stick, or go get a deep tissue massage, releasing that stuff can really put a lot of less tension on the kneecap. So kind of think of that, anything that's tight around the knee is just going to put more stress on the knee joint, period, forever and ever and ever and ever. So it's one of those, like, you know, nothing wrong with getting a deep tissue massage, right?
Nope.
Like,
oh, no,
sign
no.
me up.
Multiple reasons for that one. Yeah. I've even seen in some situations with someone who might do a lot more hip flexor stretching, it really ends up relieving that kneecap pain as well. That connection that we're talking about, kind of up and down the chain, where it could be a really tight hip flexor.
Yep.
That could be like the beginning of the issue.
Exactly. Yeah, it is. It's definitely one of those. The hip flexor plays a big role into low back pain and knee pain. So do not have a tight hip flexor.
Biggest takeaway from today, no tight hip flexors. So let's move to kind of the outside edge of the knee. So that really helped with, like, cross the top and then maybe on the inside edge of your knee. Now the outside edge, I feel like this is more of that IT band syndrome. So can you explain what IT band syndrome is? I feel like the IT band, like, that is a term that we hear tossed around all the time, but I feel like it's mythical. Nobody really knows what we're talking about with when we say IT band. So could you explain what the IT band is and what IT band syndrome is?
Yes. And there's a chapter in my book on this whole fun subject.
Awesome.
But anyway, it functions more like a ligament. Here we are again. And it's this dense, thick tissue on the, all the way on the outside of your leg that runs from your knee all the way up into the hip. And really, people think the best thing to do is foam roll it and try to stretch it. And I'll be the first one to tell you, like, you ain't stretching that thing. Like, you're not. If you haven't dissected it or seen it in the, like, cadaver or online, like, you cannot stretch this thing. So let's just put that to bed. You're not stretching the IT band. but people are, they try, and foam rolling it might give you some kind of, I think it just gives you maybe some, you know, releasing the fascia, like there's something to that and getting blood flow, like, but really that IT band gets kind of pinched on the outside of the femoral condyle. So your femur bone, your thigh bone on the outer side of it is where that friction process happens. And the reason it usually happens is because your hip flexors are tight.
There's that again.
Yeah, here we go again. You're going to see some common themes. That hip flexor is tight, and that IT band kind of attaches into what's called your tensor fascia lata, the TFL, and that's more of a hip flexor. So when it's tight, it's going to pull that IT band and tension it more. And then the other issue is your glute meds, that muscle in your butt that pushes out to the side, any sideway movement. If that's weak, you can see if the out to side muscle is weak, your leg's going to dive in, your knee's going to dive in. Well, that's going to tension that outer corner of your knee and create friction there. And that's really, those two issues create that frictioning on the outside of your knee. And it feels like a hot poker stabbing the side of your knee when you have IT band syndrome. I mean, it hurts. People, they limp and they could swear something is really wrong with their knee, but it's just this friction process happening over there. But those are the two culprits, really, is the tight hip flexors and then the weak glutes, the weak hip abductors on the side. So that's really what I've found. And if they work on the hip flexor, releasing that and the quads and really work on strengthening their glutes, you will get rid of that IT band. But I mean, I'm still amazed to this day how people insist that they need to stretch their IT band and solve the IT. I'm like, it's not going to solve your IT band problem. It just, I mean, I did have a runner come in. She qualified for Boston and she was, you know, getting ready for the Boston Marathon. And she was starting to have basically some pain on the outside of her knee. And she'd been foam rolling the IT band and getting massage on the IT band. And she comes in and we do an assessment. And sure enough, it was just tight hip flexors and quads. Released that, gave her the right stretches and things to do. She was fine. Went on her merry way. It wasn't, you know, treat the IT band.
Yeah. So she had spent all of that time and effort foam rolling the IT band and turned it to just the front and funneled her hip flexors and her quads a little bit more. Maybe that would have helped. I totally agree. And I feel like even IT band stretches, like they don't really stretch it anyway. Like you said, it's just this thick rope that's not meant to be long. It was never designed to gain in flexibility. It's not like your hamstring where you can benefit from having a more mobile hamstring. You know, the IT band, it's like a structure, almost like a bridge, you know, like these outer girders that prevent your leg from diving inward. It's not meant to be long. And so stretching it like crazy, it just might even cause more problems. I don't know if you could even stretch it. Sounds like we can't even really stretch it.
No, you really can't. It's one of those where I try not to, you know, if someone has been doing that, I don't like to make them necessarily feel, but they're trying to do something. So it's just like, all right, let's redirect here. But yeah, it definitely is one of those things that you could swear something is really wrong with your knee because it really does hurt on the outside. So that's the biggest thing is like stretch those hip flexors and quads and release those and get your glutes strong.
For sure. So I feel like the exercises that are coming to mind or something like where you've got the mini band, right? So the mini band around your knees and you're doing like some side stepping, maybe some squats with a band on, things that are really working those outer hips.
Yeah. And then the studies that have been done for both, it's interesting, the patellofemoral syndrome camp and the IT band syndrome camp, they both, when you videotape and look at their gait mechanics in slow motion, they also tend to do like a scissor pattern, right? So you're walking almost like on a balance beam. So you can see how that would like tension more, that angle coming across is going to tension that outer IT band even more. And then the angle, instead of having your knee land right under, you know, your foot lands, your knee should be right on top of that. Your hip should be right above that. But instead you're coming across at an angle. Well, that's going to cause uneven forces through the knee joint and then affect the kneecap. So it's funny, like both of those populations will show this kind of, I don't know, scissor pattern is what I call it when they run like that or walk like that, either way.
Well, and I'm wondering too, as you're mentioning that, like just if there's certain women that perhaps have maybe wider hips, like a wider pelvic girdle, if just that anatomical feature could be contributing to them having these issues even more, because when they're walking, that angle coming out of the femur, it's going to be greater than someone who has more narrow hips.
I think it does. It takes a little more effort on their side to kind of think about where their foot is landing versus the rest of us that don't have that. We may not have to think about it at all.
Okay. So with all the women that you've treated throughout the years and the legs that you've rehabilitated, is there anything that you really wish that women knew? Like anything that you felt like, oh, if you just did this, it would prevent so many issues. Is there anything that comes to mind?
You just need to understand your own body. You really just kind of like how you educate your people on their body type and what that means for nutrition and for working out. you need to understand your body type really from head to toe in terms of your foot structure, your knee structure, your hip structure. And if you understand that and you understand what areas tend to be an issue for tightness or for weakness or for needing more support, you will do better long term. You can set up a plan that actually works for the body you've been given.
That's so good. And I feel like that's where the value of working with a professional, like working with a physical therapist like yourself, having another set of eyes on you that can critically look and say, hey, look, you have really high stiff arches. Your ankle is really locked up tight, or your knee is tracking inward. Just having that second set of eyes, because the average mom just might not care or might not really want to put the time into understanding her kneecap tracking, you know? And so to have the professional around her to be like, hey, listen, this is how your body wants to work. Let's work with that and maybe help improve its overall function. That's, I feel it's so, so helpful. That body awareness. I totally agree.
Yeah. That's I think where I've just with every patient, like I finally like, okay, this person just doesn't even realize that this is part of their structure. And, you know, when you're trying to do a certain exercise and you just don't move that way, your next thought should kind of be like, well, is it just because it's a new movement? Is it just that coordination and motor learning? Is it a weakness thing? Or is it a structural thing that I really, you don't want to force it to the point where you could hurt yourself, you know? So it's one of those, my right hip has some arthritis in it and I can't get into certain stretches and movements that you have on your wonderful program. So I know how to modify it. I know that. And I know how to work to my limit where I get that stretch, but I don't get into the joint compression and pinch and the pain. And some people just, they think they're supposed to keep going into that. And it's like, no. You have to know when it's a bony block, a structural block that's stopping you.
And I feel like even when they have good awareness of their body, they can get into those vulnerable positions and know how to fire up like the proper sides and the proper supporting structures to avoid the pain and, you know, to turn on their glutes more when they're doing a squat or a lunge to get things to track and fire better. And yeah, just because they are more aware of, hey, when I squat, this is how my body naturally wants to do it. So I have to pay more attention to this, this, and this. And that's so helpful. Okay. Well, I have a couple fun follow-up questions here at the end. I did not prep you for these. So this is kind of hot seat. Okay. So Jen, you're a mom and you're a boy mom, right? You have three boys. Okay. Tell me about your boys. What's your favorite thing about your boys and favorite thing about being a mom, a boy mom?
There's never a dull moment ever. Never a dull moment. And I just love that we all are we're an active adventure seeking family and we love new experiences together. So I think that's probably my highlight. Like everybody loves talking about the next upcoming trip, the next thing we're going to go do, the next thing we're going to go explore. And I think everyone's just, we're all, even though we have varied interests amongst everyone and all three of them are different, we all are on the same page with that.
I love that. That is just so much fun. Now I'm sure that sometimes you do want to have a break from them.
Oh, yes.
Now, if you had a full day all to yourself without the boys, what would you do with your day? What would be your thing?
Oh, I love going to the beach and just being at the beach. I mean, it could be a cloudy day and I can still enjoy being at Cannon Beach. I think the ocean is just calming and at the same time can be re-energizing. It can help you reflect. There's something about, it's relentless. The ocean is just relentless. And there's just something about that that is just, it just restores my soul. That's the best way I can put it.
Ugh, I totally agree. Take me to the beach, especially without, you know, little children getting sand in their eyes and whining about sand in their mouth.
Yes. Yep.
So much more enjoyable without that. Okay. In another life, if you were not a physical therapist, what would you do? Like if you could go back to school and do things totally differently, what would you do?
Oh, that's a good one. I really love coaching in general. So coaching, whether it would be in the physical therapy realm or whether it would be nutrition and wellness, or even whether it would be business coaching. I just find any aspect of coaching very, very fun. So it would have to be something along those lines of coaching, but in a different business, I'd be fine with that. And I love marketing. I think that's a very fun, engaging aspect of you know, I could see myself in that kind of career as well. So something along those lines, I would easily see myself in as well.
I could see that. I think you're phenomenal with all that stuff. So I totally see that for sure. So, okay, finally, how can my listeners get in touch with you if they've got more questions, if they want to get your book, if they want to connect with you and maybe even work with you? I know that you've been doing some more like virtual therapy in Washington and Oregon. I know I have a lot of listeners here in the Oregon area. How can people get in touch with you?
Probably the best is my email. So jennifer@penrosept.com. The book is for sale on Amazon, so that's easy to find. And then my website is penrosept.com. So there's lots of free tip reports on back pain, knee pain, you name it. There's all sorts of free things there. And then the virtual stuff, because of wonderful COVID, I went ahead and got my dual license. So I got my license in Oregon, in addition to Washington, because a runner who read my book and she has family in the Olympia area reached out and wanted to work with me virtually. And I said, well, I can do that, but the rules are I have to be licensed wherever the patient or the client is located. So that's how that works. So I went ahead and got that for Oregon to work with her. And then that just sort of spread from there. So that she was a runner, sent me videos of herself running, you know, had a spouse videotape her, and I reviewed those and went over them, and then was able to solve all her little aches. And again, these are little aches and pains that were just an annoyance, not really huge. But she kind of thought like, well, I guess COVID, because I have to work from home and I can't go to my gym and I can't do this and I can't do that, I might as well get these things resolved. So it was just interesting. Her mindset was like, well, then I guess I'll fix this stuff so that I'm ready for when everything can go back to quote normal. And so it was fun. I mean, I've had a lot of fun with the telehealth stuff, because really it's a matter of just watching movement and correcting it and explaining what's causing what and how to fix that. And it's been great.
I'll make sure to link everything that you just mentioned in our show notes if anybody wants to go there to check them out. Well, Jen, this has been awesome. I feel like we learned so much from you. You are just a wealth, a treasure trove of information. And I'm excited for people to finally get their aches and pains figured out. So this has been great. Thank you so much for coming on the show. I really appreciate it.
I loved it. It's my pleasure.
Thanks, Jen.
Thank you for listening to the Stay Healthy South Sound podcast, brought to you by Penrose and Associates Physical Therapy. If you want some free tips to implement right away on various problems like knee pain, back pain, running injuries, and many more issues, then jump on over to penrosept.com and download the free report that fits your needs. You will receive helpful tips right away and have the choice to email in for further questions and set up a free phone consultation. You can reach us at 360-456-1444 and info@penrosept.com. You can stay connected with us at stayhealthysouthsound.com and subscribe on iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts. Thanks again for joining us, and we'll see you next time on the Stay Healthy South Sound podcast.